Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short bedtime tales and modern fables.
So close your eyes and open your imagination as we listen to Episode 26, Laika. Somewhere and sometime, there might have been an alien who was the first dog in space.
She was free. Free at last. She, who had no name, was again wandering the dark ocean on her millennium-long journey to rejoin the others like herself. Only the color shift of the pinpoints of starlight from blue in front to red in her wake marked her passage. She was finally free of the gravity that had so unexpectedly ripped her from her native space to bind her to the solid rock and force her to crawl across its surface like the planet's other poor inhabitants. She shuddered at the thought. Too much time had been lost roaming the inhospitable streets of that world. She had been trapped there for almost one full orbit of its unmemorable yellow star, but the coldness that remained in her heart was now being dissolved by the splendor of the luminous clouds of a nearby nebula. Letting the recent past fall away from her, she turned toward it, instinctively seeking to be caressed by the gentle fingers of the young stars it hid within its majestic presence. It was late December, 1956, as an unusually bitter winter wind bit into the stone of the old city. Few people had dared to venture out, so no one noticed the faint green wisp of northern light that seemed to reach down to touch a deserted corner of Gorky Park near the frozen Moskva River. She woke, new sensations aching in her core. Her stomach growled, and she thought, how could one feel so cold in a place hundreds of degrees warmer than the infinite chill of interstellar space? Space. It seemed so far away now, and she longed for its freedom. Attracted by the chaotic thoughts of billions of minds, she had drifted too close to this rock, allowing the hungry fingers of gravity to rip her from the sky, and now she was trapped in a physical alien form. She experimented, four legs stretched. She wagged something. She sniffed. A new experience almost overwhelmed her. Chemicals, metals, the past presence of other animals, ghosts of thousands of beings, baking bread, cooking, musty earth, all came rushing through what she instinctively knew was her nose. As intense as the thoughts that lured her here, they invaded her mind. She calmed herself down and stretched again, pushing deeper into the leaf-lined crevice to get away from the gnawing cold, curled into a ball, and went back to sleep. The Monchik, one of the many names she would have, was what the two-legged creature that threw scraps of food into the alley for the local forelegs behind the old cafe on Herzen Street had come to call her. And as the creature known as the Monchik, she wandered the streets of the place called Moscow through the shortest days of winter, looking for bits of food abandoned by the towering two-legged beasts. The two legs apparently dominated this world and turned out to be the source of the thoughts that had inadvertently brought her here. She discovered that she could see into their minds, and when the Monchik planted a thought, some would give her food or a place to sleep on the coldest nights. The other four-legged beings like herself, sometimes friends and sometimes competitors, needed to be carefully watched and avoided lest they gang up on her. She had witnessed this behavior all too often, particularly around food. Life was not easy here, and every day she yearned to leave. One afternoon, as the days were growing warmer, a group of two legs from Herzen Street gathered in anxious conversation in front of Pavel's bakery. The Monchik sat patiently in the shadows between a pile of trash and the greasy brick of a neighboring shop. She reached into their minds and saw that they were excited by the news of an event taking place in the big square, just beyond the tomb of the important dead two-legged leader. They were both excited and apprehensive. The mix of emotions confused Lemanchuk, but the mention of space caught her attention, and her longing for it made up her mind. She would follow them. Lemanchuk shadowed the disorganized pack of two legs at a distance, casually sniffing at posts and building corners, making herself look disinterested. The agitated group hurried up Herzen Street, past the tall red spires of the State Historical Museum, and on up Menage Street to the walls of the Kremlin, where a stage had been hastily erected, and a growing mass of two legs waited impatiently. Her pack of two legs pushed their way to the front of the crowd, causing a rude chorus of comments to be uttered as they passed. Lemanchuk quietly sat down beside the one who threw scraps out for the four legs. Noticing her, he smiled, leaned over and scratched her behind one ear.
"Shall we see what all the commotion is about, little Lemanchuk?" he crooned.
A tightly packed group of two legs navigated their way to the podium, protecting a pair of figures in their midst. One was heavy-set, balding, and wearing lenses over his eyes. The other was somewhat nervous, with a receding hairline. The heavier two-leg was apparently the secretary of the party, although Lemanchuk didn't understand what that meant. PA speakers placed around the open square cracked to life as Secretary Khrushchev proudly began to recount past accomplishments and boast of future scientific goals. Exploring his mind, she knew Khrushchev was open to planted thoughts. He was unconsciously deliberating how to celebrate the 40th passing of a big event. Khrushchev finished and turned to introduce the other two-leg as Sergei, head designer in the new space program, then clapped encouragingly as Sergei reluctantly came forward to stand beside him. This one was of special interest to Lemanchuk. He talked of leading the world in space exploration and of successful tests into the upper atmosphere of their new rockets that carried four legs like herself. Excited, Lemanchuk now knew how she could leave this place. The large two-leg finished the address with an intense flurry of words.
"What has been accomplished around the world up to now will be a mere flea hop compared to what we shall shortly do. It will be a symbol to all in the world of our great scientific progress."
The crowd cheered respectfully, but Lemanchuk barked louder, and for the briefest moment caught the eyes of both Khrushchev and Sergei before one of the two legs in the crowd angrily tried to silence her. She fled, but not before her idea had been placed as a seed in both men's minds. Now, all she had to do was wait. Every day after that, Lemanchuk made stops at the great square to sit beside the tomb under the red wall before being shooed away by surly guards. Until one morning, three two-legs tried to lure her away with some scraps of food.
"Hey, Oleg, what about this one?"
the smallest of them yelled. Extending a hand with a scrap of meat, Oleg carefully approached Lemanchuk. He looked directly into her dark brown eyes, and she into his mind, saw his intentions, then told him she accepted his offer.
"Yes, she looks healthy. She has made it through the Moscow winter. She has the instinct we need. Bring her."
Lemanchuk did not resist as they shoved her into a cage. Life for Laika, she was now called that by her trainers, improved dramatically. She no longer had to fight other four-legs for scraps of food or beg from the two-legs at the cafe. Laika's days now consisted of repetitive tasks the two-legs gave her to do. She had easily mastered them all on first try. But taking her cue from the other four legs, Laika made enough mistakes so she did not stand out too much. First, they would make her wait in a tiny compartment for hours and sometimes days. Then the two legs put her in a box at the end of a large boom that spun around, creating forces like the gravity that had ripped her from the sky. This was usually accompanied by loud, unnatural sounds that were piped into the cramped, spinning capsule. Two other forelegs, Albina and Mushka, trained along with her. Albina had already flown on two rockets to the edge of space. like I could sense a ghost of fear in her mind. Albina had instinctively known that she had been close to leaving her world. Laika was jealous. She would have rejoiced at being so close to hers. One day, all the Two-Legs were very excited. Their first rocket had made it into orbit, pleasing Secretary Khrushchev. There was no training that day, and Laika silently celebrated too. For the first time since her arrival on this rock, she felt she could go home. She curled up in her kennel and went to sleep, satisfied that the idea seeds she had planted were growing. Training quickly restarted and was more intense than ever, which seemed to put Albina and Mushka on edge. Many times in the next couple of days they tried to pick on Laika, but she had no quarrel with them. Instead, she focused on the minds of the Two-Legs, learning a great decision was being discussed. Finally, one of the speakers from the square that Laika had influenced came to the training complex to make an announcement to the staff. After the meeting, Oleg came to see Albina, Mushka, and Laika, stopping in front of each cage to talk in indistinct whispers with the program director, Vladimir. Then Oleg and Vladimir walked to the other side of the room, where the rest of the trainers tensely waited.
"We have less than 4 weeks," Oleg complained. "To design and build an entire capsule? This is craziness. It will not be like the R2A flights. It will have to be a one-way trip."
Oleg's voice was overtaken by intense debate. When it ended, Oleg walked over and knelt down in front of Laika's kennel.
"Little Curly, do you want to be the one to make history? It is a great honor, but it comes at a great price."
Laika wagged her tail and forced one thought into Oleg's mind.
"I'm the one."
He slowly got up and announced,
"Laika will be the one going."
Laika didn't understand why Vladimir seemed so upset. She was finally about to be set free, and the Two-Legs would achieve a great feat. The flight, designated PS-2, was planned for early November, nearly a full year after Laika had been pulled from the heavens. As the date approached, she grew happier, but Vladimir and the other trainers grew more and more concerned. One evening, he opened Laika's pen, put her on a leash, and took her home. There, she spent a few days playing with Vladimir's family, fetching sticks for his children. Laika tried to quell her growing anticipation by patiently playing the games they invented for her. Launch day finally came. Laika was so excited that the Two-Legs were concerned her heart was beating too fast, as the silver metallic cone pushed against gravity and rose on a giant orange and yellow flame. Thrust against the floor of the tiny cabin, she felt heavier than she'd ever been before, and the noises were louder, angrier, and stranger than the training sessions. For a brief moment, these sensations touched an instinct, and fear edged its way into Laika's mind, but thoughts of her imminent freedom pushed them away. Then, as suddenly as the noise and pressure had started, everything stopped, leaving Laika in the familiar gentle cradle of weightlessness. With the infinite cold and nothingness beckoning outside, Laika's spacesuit became too constricting, and Laika knew it was time to leave, luxuriously stretching long unused parts of her being. She soared away and thought,
"I'm home."
Thanks for listening to episode 26, Laika, Dog from Space. If you like the series, please tell your friends about us, or drop us an email at makeshiftstories@gmail.com, or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. And when you're there, click on Contributing to the Story if you'd like to add an idea for a future episode. The opening and closing music for Somewhere, Sometime, A Glimpse of Happiness, is PodSafe Music from premiumbeat.com. Makeshift Stories is released under Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative License, which means you're free to pass around our episodes, but please remember to credit us.